Your Preparation Station with Donna Miller is on the air. Tune in for insight and encouragement for living a more sustainable, back-to-basics lifestyle. No matter where you've come from or what the future may hold, we hope each episode will encourage you with topics, guests, and stories that inspire your journey towards self-sufficiency. And now, the hostess of Your Preparation Station, Donna Miller.
Greetings and good evening and this special episode here on Your Preparation Station. I'm Donna Miller. I'm delighted to have you with me this evening. It's like a specially scheduled program. I'm feeling all excited because I get to talk to you guys twice this week, today and tomorrow when we bring you back to your regularly scheduled programming tomorrow night. But for now, I just wanted to welcome you to this special show. I know we've really tried to get the word out because it is at a different time, because it's usually not. So we've just inundated and bugged the living daylights out of everybody to get a good showing. And we'll try to get some questions in to our special guest. I'm going to do my regular spiel, but I'm going to do it short, which is basically check up on who you're listening to. If you're new to the preparedness lifestyle, there are a lot of people that are trying to scare you. So let's just do this, the same thing I do every time. Find out who you're listening to, if they're speaking peace and calm in the midst of chaos that you're feeling right now because you feel like you might need to prepare, then they're who you need to listen to. Anybody who wants you to buy their product because it will be the only thing that saved your life. Anyone who tells you you have to prep just like they do. Anyone that makes you more tense about preparedness instead of looking forward to what you can do to prepare. Those are voices you don't need to be listening to. So I invite you to check up on me. Go to my YouTube video, which is youtube.com/thewheatguy. Yep, that's me. Or go to our store, which is where we make a living, at millersgrainhouse.com. And then last but absolutely not least, I say it last because it's most important, you can go to grainstorehouse.com. That is my husband and I, our preparedness outreach blog, in hopes to help break down prepping into kind of some bite-sized pieces to eat the elephant one bite at a time. To speak peace, where you might feel a little bit of fear, and there's no use in reacting. You just need to be proactive. We just want to help you to approach the lifestyle as a lifestyle, not a panic. So you can go to grainstorehouse.com and sign up for the newsletters. We would love to be able to assist you as you embark on a new journey. Or maybe you're an old prepper, like me. I'm not old, but we've been living this way for a while. And you just need a little booster shot. We kind of think of things a little bit out of the box, a little different. All of us do, I think. So sharing information can only help give us each a little booster shot in our preparedness journey. So after the spiel is over, which I do it every time, I'm really excited to get into this show. That's why I'm talking a mile a minute. We have on the line with us tonight Alan Madison. He's the co-executive producer for National Geographic's new series, Doomsday Preppers. If you're not familiar with the show, which I don't know where you might have been if you're not familiar with the fact that this is coming out, as a prepper, you probably are. So we're not going to go into too much about it other than some of the nitty-gritty about what you can expect behind the scenes, maybe some probing questions to find out what kind of makes this thing tick and why it got started. So I'm sure you're excited about that. Feel free to pop in some questions or call in with questions as we have the opportunity to have Alan on the line with us. Do I have you here, Alan?
Yes, Donna.
Fantastic.
I'm here.
Good. Glad to have you with us this evening. I know it's a end of your work week. It's a Friday night, and we're delighted that you've taken the time to put a punctuation on the end of the week and spend some time with us.
It is Friday night here, and it's a beautiful night here in New York City.
Awesome.
I love talking to you guys.
Well, you're going to have a pretty good crowd. I know that we had really sent the word out about this because it has been kind of a buzz topic, of course, in the preparedness realm. For years, a lot of us kind of lived quietly and did things, we had, at least our house, we got called hippies or all kinds of different things because we just didn't follow the basic pattern of norm. And it wasn't just for a Y2K event. It was more of the ability to be self-sustaining. And now, with shows like this, there's a lot more coming out and being brought up. And I know we all have a lot of questions, first of which is, why? Why do this show?
Why do this show now, I guess, is the question. And I guess the answer is that television is a mirror of what's happening, especially with the American people. And it's just mirroring what's happening out there. There are a lot more preppers. And so it's picked up by a television show. So basically, that's my ultimate reason, is that there's going to be people to watch now. If I did a prepper show possibly 10 years ago, you would have watched. And that wouldn't have made a very good audience. I mean, it would have been fine, you watching it all, but I wouldn't have been able to sell any commercial spots or anything like that.
Right, true. Do you feel like that the general populace has, which is it, an interest in prepping or a kind of a dread fascination? Or what do you think is the general populace feeling of people who you would quote-unquote label as preppers?
I don't think it's one or the other 100%. I think it's a confluence of things that people are both interested in preppers as kind of, you were saying, as watchers to see how they are doing it, especially extreme preppers. And the other part of it is people are wondering about how do I prep. And for me, I've interviewed close to 40 preppers in the last couple months, so I should say well over 40 preppers. And I think it's basically become a confluence of events that has made prepping extremely popular at this point in the history of our country. The first being 9/11, and then Katrina, and then the economic collapse were kind of three events that have intertwined to increase the prepper population in this country.
Yeah, well, that's true. So it is. It's no longer something that is, I guess, the subculture is only aware of, the subcultures of preppers themselves, before they ever were called preppers. We did this before there was a name to be called.
Actually, Don, that's a question I have for you. We've been wrestling with that. Is preppers okay? I mean, we don't want it. I definitely don't consider it survivalist. Survivalist is totally different to me than prepping. And we were kind of hamstrung with the name, but everyone, all the preppers we spoke to said, no, we're fine with prepper. And so tell me what your audience prefers.
I think the majority of people that we have that listen to us and that I'm in communication with, preppers fits better because it is not one far end of the spectrum or another. It's somewhere in that mid-range that is still somewhat sane. we have to live in the reality of here and now and prepare for what reality may change. And I think that the survivalist mentality, there's a portion of it in there because we hope to survive. But I think one of the other aspects of it is we're not far-end conspiracy theorists thinking everybody's against us and things like this are happening on purpose. At least this is my take, if you called me a prepper, where I would say it would be defined as. So I would say we're mid-road, and the majority, at least I know I have the blessing of being associated with about 30 other hosts that have this desire to actually get the word out there for encouragement. And, of course, there's a whole different sect of preppers that are doing it out of fear-mongering and wanting to turn a buck. But
right.
This is, you're going to get an ugly side to any coin, anything that goes on, it's going to happen. But the majority, I think, are very giving and sharing people that want others to be prepared because they know for their community it's what's best. It's kind of that American pioneer aspect. So I think preppers fits.
Okay, good. Then we'll feel comfortable using it then.
Yeah. It is a fairly new coined phrase, and a lot of us really have been living, were you a homesteader? Were you a... what kind of thing were you before that term ever came out? And unfortunately, the connotation needs to probably get cleared up that preppers are not all survivalist mindset. I just as soon shoot you as share bread with you. That's not, we're not all that way.
Right. No, and I would say most of the preppers that we have experienced are not that way at all. I make the distinction between survivalists and preppers. I always, you know, my friends always say to me, what's the difference between a survivalist and a prepper? And I say survivalists are interested in living alone in the woods, and preppers are interested in living in the community once a disaster happens, and or to help the community once a disaster happens. And so that's how more or less I kind of define it, and or I've tried to define it.
Mm-hmm. I think you hit it right on the head. That's probably your best way, because I don't think there is a heavy hideout and be a loner in the real preparedness movement. I think it's much more about getting the masses prepared, because good grief, if anything were a literal panic, the more people who are prepared, the less that impacts everyone's life.
Right.
Hey, shh, I have a secret. Actually, I'm just checking to see if you're listening. There's a special code embedded in each episode of your preparation station that you can save at millersgrainhouse.com/store. If you go to millersgrainhouse.com/store and put in the code YPS, you can save 5% on any and every order from now on. We just want to be able to say thank you for listening and help you prepare. Shh, remember the secret code, YPS.
You're not buying food storage containers, heirloom seeds, or water purifiers just for the fun of it. You're getting these things ready for your peace of mind. Visit the Always Ready store in Burnsville, North Carolina, where peace of mind is the end goal of preparedness. Find everything you need to get ready, from food dehydrators to whole grain wheat. Doesn't matter if you're a veteran or a novice to preparedness, the Always Ready store is there to help. Visit the store at West Main Street in Burnsville, North Carolina, located right next to Wishbone's Restaurant. Or visit www.alwaysreadystore.com to shop securely online for anything you might need to keep you and your family prepared. Always Ready Store. Are you ready?
Your preparation station is on the air.
Tell me how you pick the people that show up on the show. How do you go about that?
Well, we've put out advertisements in the prepper community, and from the National Geographic pilot, we have a place where they can go and to apply for the show. But and so basically, they send in their applications, if you will, for lack of a better word, telling me what their preps are and who they are and where in the country they are, and we choose from there. And we're mostly mm-hmm. choosing people who are, what I found most about the prepper community, which is fascinating to me, is the diversity of the prepper community all over the country, all different walks of life, all different concerns. And so we try to, out of the 40 preppers who are going to be in, 40 so preppers who are going to be in this series, they are, it reflects that diversity, or we try to reflect that diversity.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. That's, so they are voluntarily approaching you, more or less.
Oh, absolutely. We put no okay. guns to anyone's head. we don't, if someone doesn't want to be... on our show, we just walk away. We're looking for people who are interested in doing it. And quite honestly, it's in the prepper interest in a lot of ways, the prepper community interest, I found. And as you had discussed, I think all the true preppers, or preppers who understand it the best, know that no matter how much food and no matter how many guns or how much water they store, if their community is not also doing it, no matter what they do, they are dead. Because if there's 1,000 to 1, okay, there's no way they're going to survive. They will be overrun. And so I think one of the prepper tenets is involve your community. And this is just a great way to do that, to educate people and say, hey, you know what? You might want to get some extra water in your basement, some extra cans of beans or something like that, just to start, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a question in the chat room that's actually a really good one, because it was kind of coming to mind as I was listening to you talk and listening to you answer, you know, the hypothetical question from a friend, what's the difference between a prepper and a survivalist? How has doing this show changed your view of prepping?
That's a great question. Let's see. Well, when I first started, I didn't have, embarrassingly enough, when I first started the show, I didn't have a go bag. I happen to have one now under my bed, which is, I'm a little sheepish to admit, but I do. And, and I also, you know, when you're in the supermarket now, I'll sometimes pick up some extra cans of beans and I throw them in the bottom of my closet and also some extra bottled water. So it has, I am nowhere near the people who I have profiled, but in the spirit of the show, I think there is an educational factor to the rest of, to people who have not started prepping. And that is, you know, stuff happens and, you know, you might as well be prepared.
Right. Well, in a way, it can't help but get your wheels turning as to what ifs. And,
right.
You know, it's definitely, if you've ever lived in the coastal areas like of lower Florida, Alabama, and lived through a hurricane, you know the answer to a lot of those what ifs. You spend 2 weeks with no electricity, no water, no way to take a shower. And you start seeing how fast the groceries are gone in less than 2 days. So there's
right.
some, it's not a hypothetical, because for some people we've lived through at least a marginal temporary emergency situation.
I've lived in New York City my whole life, so I have also different types of emergency situations, of course. But as I said, there's a diversity of reasons, natural and man-made, that preppers are concerned about.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I had another question kind of come up, and it was more in the conversational of the chat room. But why did you actually pick the title Doomsday Preppers?
First of all, I didn't pick it.
That decision
is way above my pay grade. And I think the feeling is that it would attract more eyeballs, quite honestly. And I think that's the bottom line for everything. I mean, we try to balance both the entertainment value of our show, and we are on National Geographic, so it's entertainment plus education. And I am always looking for kind of a 50-50, 49-51, depending, somewhere in there, split on those two aspects of my show. And although the title, I feel, suggests more entertainment.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, and I think it actually helps some of the people in the preparedness lifestyle view the title better, because if it's meant to be more of an eye catcher rather than a label,
mm-hmm.
I think it probably works out much better for people to go, oh, okay, I'm not quite so rubbed wrong, because
right.
I know a lot of people would think, I'm not a doomsday prepper. I'm waiting for it. I'm looking forward to it. If it happens, it's going to be awesome. So there's nothing doom about it. It's more of a,
well,
all right.
I would say, what I say to those people, and I've had this conversation with them, I say to them, if 200,000 less viewers watch the show with a more bland title, let's say, just let's call it Preppers, period, rather than Doomsday, would that make them happy? That would probably mean out of that 200,000, another 100,000 who wouldn't start preparing if they hadn't watched the show. So, you know, we all make sacrifices. You know, it's always cost benefits.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, I asked about you, but have you noticed your production crew catching the bug any? Any of your other people around you catching the prepping bug any?
Hold on, let me ask them. Let's see.
Oh.
Hey, guys. Guys, they want to know if you guys have caught the prepping bug as well.
Yes, they have.
It sounds like it. Oh, my gosh. Okay. That's pretty good.
So they all, I guess they're all starting to do, have a couple go bags out there, you know, a couple extra cans of food. They're all a little younger than me, so maybe they're, you know, a little more devil may care, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Or I should say Donna a lot younger than me, all right?
Oh, that's another way to put it. Okay, got it. Well, I do appreciate your honesty, and I appreciate you turning around to ask everybody too, because it is one of those things that it's either this is like a train wreck and people can't look away because they just kind of go, oh, it's turning my stomach that these people do this, or they kind of start to understand a little bit, and that's of course what we hope is that people will kind of start to at least put their own thinking caps on rather than make the assumption that status quo may always be, because hurricanes and 9/11 and lots of other things show us that status quo doesn't always stay the same.
No, it does not. And I think that has become clear to everybody over the last 10 years in this country, that things mm-hmm. change rapidly, and even nowadays they change even more rapidly than older days.
Yeah.
The past.
It's all moving
past.
A lot faster. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a question in the chat room. I knew I would have a lot of these. would you consider the preppers that you profile in the series to be extreme preppers, or is it that they reflect the diversity that you're aware of as you've done the interviews?
I'm sorry, repeat it. Donnie, you kind of broke up there.
I guess it's kind of two questions. Would you consider the preppers that you profile on the series to be more the extreme prepper side?
Well, they're not me. Okay, so I'm kind of the lowest rung of preppers, I guess, with you know, with my go bag and a couple cans of beans and water. So to me, they go out to the edges of super prepped. How's that, instead of extreme?
Out to the edge of super prepped. Okay.
They are super super tricked out preppers. I mean, we're talking, you know, the 3 to 5 years of food, water treatment. Weapons, some with bunkers, some without, really kind of all the, again, the diversity of the community is what we wanted to show. So there are all sorts in there. But we have two beginners, I have to say. We do profile two beginners there who are not super tricked out. So we do the whole diversity of the prepper community, I'd like to think.
Okay. Yeah, because it's a journey. It's not really like you can throw a bunch of money at it and be done with the deal, because those who think that it works that way are going to find out how many holes they have in their preps anyway. But
it is a
journey, so everybody's kind of on a different level of it, if they've even had that light bulb go on at all. So, yeah, that's a good question whether they're extreme. But they're super preppers, so they need a cape and red tights.
yes, exactly.
Yeah, they all get like a little gold star T-shirt and a cape. Let's see, questions are just coming in nice and quick.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite prepper?
That's unfair. That's like asking if I have a favorite child. I love both my children equally. Okay, they all have great attributes that I respect and I enjoy. How's that? Okay, you're not going to get me on that one. Maybe after. Maybe if there's a second season, I'll be able to tell you who my favorite was the first season. Okay.
There you go. When it's over. Okay, gotcha. All right. What seems to be the coolest prep that you've seen on the show?
Wow. The coolest prep. I really loved the swimming pool that was turned into an aquaponic garden / tilapia farm. I thought that was ingenious. So that was a really interesting prep. What else have I seen that I really, really liked? I also loved, I've seen some great bunkers that are like, oh my gosh. That I can't believe it, and they're all tricked out like, you know, like an underground RV, basically, where you're like, oh my gosh, this is cushy. So that was that's always interesting to me as well. And then we met one prepper who is an expert in camouflage, and I found that fascinating. And he would just disappear in different environments, and so I thought that was pretty cool as well. I think most of the stuff that really interests me is often the most self-sustainable things that take a little ingenuity and use solar or regrowing mm-hmm. stuff so that they've all become so self-sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually kind of interesting, because we used to be a very self-sustainable nation. I mean, the colonists, of course, but our move across the nation, we had to be very self-sustaining. So when we get back, I'd like to discuss how you guys evaluate, because I know you do a little evaluation. I want to talk about that a little bit, and we'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Okay, excellent.
National Geographic traveled all the way to Boone, North Carolina, to select Turtle Island Preserve, a nonprofit outdoor discovery center and Appalachian Heritage Farm, as one of the 100 most enriching destinations in North America. For over 26 years, families have gained enrichment while discovering nature, and more importantly, themselves. In a world where digital screens and push buttons have replaced actual contact with nature, Turtle Island's beautiful campus and knowledgeable staff reconnect its guests to their natural roots. While camping out, visitors learn vast amounts in our non-electric, wood-fired community. Hundreds of hands-on classes are offered, such as beekeeping, woodworking, primitive skills, and more, covering the gamut of early traditional living. A program for fathers and sons kicks off the summer season, followed by a 5-day workshop for adults with renowned naturalist and director Eustace Conway. Turtle Island is a great destination for scouts, school field trips, homeschool, and special interest groups. Please visit our website and then visit our paradise, turtleislandpreserve.org, or call 828-265-2267.
2 days that can save your life. The Preppers and Patriots Expo, August 16th and 17th at the Doubletree Hotel in Springfield, Missouri. Learn about long-term storage food, water filtration, solar power, firearms for survival, wilderness survival, and ways to protect you and your family during an emergency. Vendor tables still available. The phone number to call, 417-264-2435. 417-264-2435. PreppersandPatriots.net.
Your preparation station is on the air.
Welcome back to Your Preparation Station. I am your host, Donna Miller. Glad to have you with me for this special edition on Friday, February 3rd. If you're listening later, I'm hoping you're listening before the 7th of February, because that's when this show, Doomsday Preppers, airs again. I believe it's Tuesday, February 7th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time?
That is correct.
Okay, good. I know I have my DVR set. That's all I know. So that's it. I said it as soon as I heard about it. And we are here asking some pointed questions. And I know you get a little transparent and personal, and especially on my show, because of how my listeners tend to ask questions. So you've been very honest and very forthright on some weird ones already. But,
all right.
We're really glad to have Alan Madison here. He's the co-executive producer for Doomsday Preppers on National Geographic. If you go to the National Geographic website, it'll be nationalgeographic.com and channel/doomsday-preppers. You can find it. Just Google it. You'll find all sorts of stuff about it and check up some things. One of the things I found very interesting is the most memorable prepper quotes. Those have cracked me up. We say some pretty interesting things as preparedness people. I think the T-shirts on some of those, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite parts of doing the show is picking a title.
Oh, they're awesome. The quotes are great. Some of them I don't quite get, but, you know, whatever.
Once we see the show.
Yeah, there you go. We have, during the break, of course, a bazillion questions coming in the chat room, so I'm going to try to organize this. But first, what I did want to ask you was, I know that you guys have a group of experts that evaluate. Could you tell us what they use to evaluate the families that are on the show?
I can. I'll kind of try to give you the outlines of it, but it would be better if you had them on at one point to really go through it, because I'm not 100% familiar with all the things that they do. But mostly it is a large questionnaire of what their preps are, what they're preparing for in detail. And that's the first level of stuff. And then they see our show, and then they go through that, and then they speak to the producer who is there to also ask questions. So it's a pretty thorough questioning about what's there, what exists for this prepper, and what they are trying to prep against, not prep against, prep for.
Okay. I will say one thing.
Sure.
This is just me. This is a personal thing, I think, and I think a lot of other preparedness people think this way, because prepping is not a one-size-fits-all thing. That the evaluation might be a little bit difficult, and I think maybe for the audience to understand how they're being evaluated, it might be helpful for them to understand it. But that's all I'm saying, because you're finding it out. Everybody's preps are different.
Absolutely, I totally agree with you. And also, what we find out also, which is even harder to kind of evaluate, is that it's not only the things they have. Prepping is a education and a mindset that we see people having, and that is extremely hard to evaluate. And we would like to next time perhaps, you know, bring the evaluators on site, but that, as you can imagine, is economically harder, okay, and just logistically harder for us to do. But we are trying to resolve those issues.
Yeah, I think that would be very difficult for anyone to evaluate a preparedness lifestyle, because if they don't live with you and know how you live, I mean, it is kind of difficult. So, but yeah, you got to give it some type of a rating system so there's a continuity from show to show too.
Yeah, and we're also just trying to get those preppers. One of the fun parts about the show, I feel, is kind of the dialogue between the show, the experts, and the preppers. And we will be having at the end of each show this kind of update where the preppers kind of get the last word, where they say either they've listened to the experts or they haven't, and what they're continuing to do. And it's one of my favorite parts of the show.
So now, can you share with us who the experts are, or do they have to stay? The anonymity is important.
They will be known after the first episode. So I would want people to go watch and see who the experts are after the first episode, because they will be made public on that.
All right, first show. Well, that's cool. And whenever you call yourself an expert, I don't know whether they did it or you did, it doesn't matter. It always puts you up for extra pot shots. So
That's exactly right.
There's some brave souls, because seriously, that expert name tag just really puts you right out there for a target on your back.
I'm sure they're going to get a lot more hits on their website and a lot more questions and comments on their website as well.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, I do have more questions in our chat room. So let's see. One listener writes in, I'm wondering if the preppers tell us, or actually tell you, how much their prepping setups cost them.
Often they do. Yes, they do. Some choose not to tell us, and that's fine as well.
Is there any chance that that is part of a criteria for the prepping experts to judge on whether or not it was well done in a budget, or if they just had a lot of expendable income, therefore they could prep so much better than anybody else?
That's a great question. I would say that our experts do take it into account, but often not as much as I would like. And that's a tough one. I mean, that is a tough one, and that's something I could work towards as the shows continue to understand the concept of, of course, if you have a lot of disposable income, it's a lot easier versus doing a prepper who doesn't have as much disposable income.
And that does kind of speak to the pulse of what's going on in America now with the economy. If you think it's going to get worse, how do you prepare when you're already in a strapped situation? So
that's true, and we do see a lot of creative thinking that way, trying to deal with that.
Another question in the chat room is, what do you see, and I guess maybe in a way, what do most of the preppers see, if you don't have one to pick, as the most likely doomsday scenario?
Oh gosh. the most likely doomsday scenario. Well, let's see. For me, personally, it would probably be me walking outside and crossing the street against the light, and then boom, that would be it. So that's my personal doomsday, because I live in New York City, of course. But I guess the one that, the doomsday scenario that I had to pick that seemed the most looming sometimes for me was when I heard about an EMP. And I kind of was like, oh, my, that's bad. That'll really put us in a hole. So that was one that kind of sparked my imagination. How's that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It would it would be one of those things that there is really no control over it actually happening. You can't arm against it enough to thwart it actually changing how life goes. Honestly, I think that's my favorite one. But I'm ready to be thrown back a couple hundred years and people actually have to work. I mean, sweat, you know, physically. I think it'd be kind of interesting to find out, you know, how well we could really do. But
yeah, I don't want to find out. No, I don't. You know, I live in New York City. I wouldn't even be able to take the elevator down.
You'd have to deal with stairs. I know.
Yeah, exactly. If I had to pick a second, and we just did one recently, it was it would be pandemic. That's another one that I really don't appreciate.
I have to admit that one I think is probably one of my deeper seated. It causes more anxiety than an EMP. EMP would almost be kind of fun, but the other, you know, there's no fun in that whatsoever because you do have people you care for and people you want to care for, whether or not you're able to. It's just a difficult situation all the way around.
I agree.
Oof, that's just such a morbid thought. I'm not going there.
Okay.
But
let's turn it around. Let's turn the wave around.
Yeah, let's turn that around because that one is, you know, they're all pretty much equal much a possibility because they are all so outlandishly impacting that no matter, you know, what one of them would actually hit, the level of being prepared is a little bit different. When you work with your subjects, is that the best thing to call them?
Our characters, with your, people.
And we're Prepper. All characters, right. Are they trying to prep for all scenarios, or do you think that each family group focuses primarily on just one thing predominantly?
There are some that prep for all, and what we try to do is focus on many that are prepping for just one, or even though they are prepping for all, to focus on one. And it gives us a little more diversity again and education of people who are unfamiliar with any of the possible reasons for people to be preparing. So I guess it's a little bit of both. You know, we have a lot of people preparing for everything and a lot of people who are just really concerned about one particular thing.
And as far as, yeah, I guess you were asked what's your likely scenarios, what would you find would be the most, without feeling like you're picking on anybody, one of the most outlandish scenarios that someone says they would be prepping for? I mean, you've interviewed a lot of people, so it may not be somebody on the show. It may be you've heard it elsewhere. What do you feel like is one of the most outlandish ones?
Well, my staff, many of my staff are preparing to be fired because they're not doing their job. So I think that's probably the most outlandish, because I love them all and I would never fire them. They're all listening out in the other room and they're all panicked now. All their heads rose up above the cubicle. Yeah, exactly. All their heads rose up above the cubicles now. So I don't know. The most outlandish one, I don't know. I probably would prefer not answering that question because it would put a pejorative on one of my people who went out of their way to help us.
Well, then let me ask this question. Are you focusing on a certain area of the country, or is this spread across the country?
It's totally spread across the country. I have a map here in my office, and it is pockmarked with different people all across the country, from Massachusetts to San Diego, from Washington to Florida.
Seriously, now, you don't find one area of the country more populated with people interested in either being on the show or hot topics, really. It's pretty well spread across the country.
I would say, well, first of all, we try to spread it across the country because, again, one of my goals is to show the diversity of the community. So I do try to get not everybody in one state. I think that would be boring. So we do try to look for a different representatives of each state. We obviously find a lot of preppers in Utah because of the Mormon Church and their influence in prepping and their theories about prepping also. So we get a lot in Utah, I would say.
It's a little bit more solidified in that area as far as for years it's been taught. So that's fantastic. So your representation is across the board, trying to get it across the area. But what about people wanting to be on the show? I know this. Okay, I'm just going to say it. In the South, we can't help but keep the weirdest of us off television. It just happens that way. We all, you know, that 15 minutes of fame thing, you know what I'm talking about. And so, you know, the woman in her curlers and her bedroom slippers is going to be the first one to be interviewed at the scene of an accident. She's ran out of her door and she's right there. So is there an area that just seems to be just more people want to get on? Now, I'm not saying it's because of that. I think if it's a preparedness thing, it's because we want our area to be ready. When it comes to people trying to get on the show and get the word out, do you have a saturated area?
Yeah, I truly don't think so. I mean, not more so in the South than the West. We have a lot of in the East. Looking at my map, I can tell you that we're missing some up in the North Dakota, South Dakota area, but I would imagine that's because they're also the least populated areas of the country. Mm-hmm. But my goal is really to get every state. We all across the country. As I said, maybe there's a little more in Utah, Colorado, Arizona, again, because of the Mormon influence, and that is part of their religious philosophy.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people are coming on tonight, listening to the show, anticipating the show on the 7th and haven't seen anything about it prior to that. So this question is really good. Did the show, when it broadcast, did it show how the preppers started out with the basics, or do you really just jump into like the lifestyle that they're in right now?
We jump into the lifestyle they're doing right now, but we do get one or two lines about their history and how they started.
Mm-hmm.
Or three or four lines, I would say.
Well, so there is a little bit of a starting gate, how everybody got out of the gate for each family.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I'm getting so many questions coming in at a time, it's awesome. Did you find many people who were prepping but wanted to stay within the city or suburban areas, not everybody trying to head for the hills when you were doing this?
I'm sorry, repeat that. I missed it, Donna.
Did you find many people who were prepping but their desire was to stay within their urban or suburban area rather than bug out and run?
I think most of them, I think part of the philosophy of prepping is to stay and remain in your home, but also have a plan to bug out.
So a combination of the two.
Yeah. I mean, you could tell me better than anybody. Is it part of the prepper philosophy really to remain?
I think a lot of people, especially if they own their home or if they've been in a family home for a while, they do want to stay put because it's not just a matter of, well, I'll speak for ourselves. It's not just a matter of having enough stuff. It's a matter of being able to sustain prolonged. If you grow a garden, you need the ground you've been preparing for a season. If you have livestock that you need a place to have them. So the majority of people, I think, do their first goal is to stay put, but they do somewhere in the back of their mind have an emergency contingency plan.
Right. I agree with that.
I have a question here that asks, is there any plan in the future to do this type of thing internationally to find out if other people in other countries are doing this?
I would love to do that, but there are no plans currently for that.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think we as Americans are the only ones that are, well, I'd say we're pretty heavy-handed in the preparedness, but...
I don't think we're the only ones, of course, but here in America we do things bigger and sometimes better than everybody else. So I think we probably have more. How's that?
Yeah, but I would say we do it on a vast and various scale compared to most countries, I'm sure, like we do everything else.
Yep, exactly. Although I am aware that Switzerland has a whole series of bunkers under their mountains, so they might be the best prepared country.
Well, yeah, that could be true. We all need to take a trip over there and maybe learn a few things.
Do you have your free digital subscription to Prepare Magazine yet? If not, then hurry over to preparemag.com and start getting each monthly issue sent directly to your inbox. It's easy. All you have to do is go to preparemag.com, enter your name and email address, and you're subscribed. Consider signing up for the premium membership for past issues and exclusive resources. You can even subscribe to the beautiful print version of Prepare Magazine. Visit preparemag.com and choose the option that's most valuable to you. Prepare Magazine, encouraging, empowering, and enriching your journey.
Your preparation station is on the air.
When it comes to, because you get the opportunity, I know we have the chance to share things here on the radio station. We have the chance to share and bring in guests that have differing ways of doing things, which is fantastic. But you have a unique opportunity to be able to see just all these different ways of preparedness and ways of living. Have you been able to find, one common thing that basically says this is why they're preparing? Do they all want to prepare for one common thing? Well, let's put it this way. End of the world as we know it is one thing. But do they have a predominant doomsday, I guess?
No, I think there's really a diversity of opinions out there about how it's all going to end.
Yeah, okay.
There's as many people as there are theories of how, it'll be the end of the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I have another question. Why do these people share that they want to be on this show?
As I said, I think people want to get other people prepared and mm-hmm. see what they have so that they can be educated about their preps and about the possibilities of things going wrong. And so I think that is a big motivation in the prepper community, is to get other people on board because they are aware of the fact that if it's only them, then they're not really prepared.
Well, tell me about what was your first exposure to a prepper?
On the show, I went out and shot, the first prepper I shot or produced was, in Arizona. And,
yeah, be careful how you say that.
Yeah, exactly. I only shoot with a camera, so I think it was Arizona. And it was a totally pleasant, interesting experience.
So that was really, you had no real connection and contact with other people who were preppers? You just kind of, maybe heard about them before?
Nothing. Zero, zip, zilch. Had no idea.
Okay. Really?
Yep, I had no idea.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And you enjoyed it. You weren't totally freaked out and scared?
I'm not that type. I have a very open mind for everything, so not at all, not in the least. I found it very interesting.
That's fantastic. I have another question in the chat room. Do you include information at the end on where to find things that the preppers might actually make or buy?
We don't really include name brands of things or mm-hmm. Places like, Home Depot, for example, or whatever. but we don't give that information, no. But
okay.
We do give ideas to people about preparations. They just won't be, hopefully, not attached to a product, or we at least make that attempt.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I have one question.
Sure.
Product-wise is one thing. I know a lot of people, get the feeling that, I've got to get this in order to be prepared. I've got to get that in order to be prepared. Do you find that these preppers are as skill prepared as they are product prepared?
Yes. I think the short answer is yes. I think most of them are both product and mindset/educationally prepared.
Mm-hmm. Because I know, yeah, it does. I know we in on the radio station and in the work that I do and the classes that I teach, what I find is people may have a grain mill or a manual mill or a solar cooker or whatever, and they just don't ever use it. They're hanging on to it for when if. I'm sorry, but when it all, if something happens, because we've been in hurricanes and you know when you have no power, that's not the time to, you know, be thinking about the batteries. You need to actually know where they are, know how to work the battery operated thing, you know, gas is in the generator, and know how to start it, be able to start it physically be fit enough to care for these skill sets that are completely different than our day-to-day lives. And that's kind of my question about, you know, having a ton and a half of food doesn't do you any good if you don't really know how to use the food you've stored. So you feel like the ones that you're highlighting actually are practicing, not just stocking up and hoping.
Yes, I would say a good 80% are the way you just described, that they are not only just stocking up but are also – it's a mindset and a skill set as well.
Mm-hmm. And that is one thing that we really try to promote in both our preparedness outreach blog, on the radio, and in classes that we teach, is that practicing it now when we're in relative peace and calm, nothing in our life is majorly upheavaled, gives you that ability to kind of keep moving forward without much of a glitch should certain things occur. Whether it's a personal tragedy, a personal doomsday, you know, or a social or economical one, you know, it's the skill set really that'll get you through more than a ton of product. So
absolutely, you can drown in water if you don't know how to swim.
Exactly, perfect scenario. I have another question. Did you find that most of these preppers are considering any type of medical preparedness?
Yes, and unfortunately, Donna, I'm going to have to make the next question probably the last one because I personally am running out of time, and I'm so sorry about that. Yes, they do. We're always looking for more, but usually they do have, many of them do have medical supplies stocked as well as food and water. And everything else. Usually not as much, I have to say. But we do have some people who are especially concerned about pandemic who are much more stocked in medical supplies than people who are, let's say, concerned with an EMP.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's true. If that's their focus, that's important that they're, you know, they focus on that. Well, my last question actually is, so this is the second, I guess, in the series. Is that correct, the one that's airing on the 7th?
Yes. Well, the pilot is,
okay.
I guess one could count it as the first, but we always count it as the first one of the series airing on Tuesday.
Okay, so this is really the first real series. The pilot's already run. How do you feel like it's been received, and do you look forward to this going more in the future?
How do I think it's going to be received?
Mm-hmm.
I hope with cheers and bells on and everyone loves it.
So you feel like there will be more of these to come in the future?
Yeah, it better be, or I'm not going to be able to put my kids through college.
Well, we'll do our best to all tune
okay.
in. And you know what? We may have to have you back after the show so you can give some feedback for some real-life preppers. So I'd be delighted to have you come back, Alan.
I would love that, Donna. That would be fantastic. And maybe after like the fourth or fifth episode halfway through, and so we can make adjustments on the fly. That would be fantastic.
I would be delighted. You just let me know when you want to come, and the door's always open.
Okay. Thank you very much, Donna.
Thank you, Alan. We've been speaking with Alan Madison, the co-executive producer for Doomsday Preppers on National Geographic. I was delighted to be able to work out having him on the show. Thank you, and I hope you guys will tune in now on February 7th to National Geographic at 9 o'clock Eastern, and you get a little bit of an insight from the show producer, so it's awesome. You can look at it a little bit differently. Thank you for listening. Enjoy your weekend that's ahead of you, and God bless you. Bye-bye.
This has been another episode of Your Preparation Station with Donna Miller. We would love to hear from you. Please connect with us at yourpreparationstation.com and on Facebook. Tune in again next time for another encouraging episode. Until then, keep growing and finding joy in the journey.